What if the answer to your darkest moments wasn't found in a pill bottle or a therapist's office, but in something as simple as moving your body for 60 seconds? Picture a woman in her late 40s, overweight, clinically depressed, lying on her sofa in pajamas, scrolling through social media. Now, imagine that same woman crossing a marathon finish line, radiant with accomplishment. The distance between these two moments isn't measured in miles. It's measured in 60-second intervals of courage. This transformation didn't require superhuman willpower or athletic talent. It required something far more accessible: the willingness to put on worn-out sneakers, grab a kitchen timer, and shuffle down a secluded ravine path with a patient yellow lab. What began as a desperate attempt to feel anything other than numb became a masterclass in how movement rewrites the brain's darkest narratives. That first attempt at running was almost comically modest. With a digital kitchen timer set for 60 seconds, tube socks pulled over flabby calves, and Morgan the dog looking utterly unbothered, the journey began in a hidden ravine where no one could witness potential failure. The pain arrived immediately: chest burning, breasts bouncing uncomfortably in an ancient sports bra, lungs screaming for mercy. When the timer finally beeped after what felt like an eternity, the celebration was genuine. We did it! Though Morgan hadn't even broken his easy stride. This wasn't about athletic achievement. It was about proving to a mind drowning in depression that action was still possible. The pattern was simple. 60 seconds of jogging, walking to recover, repeat, 20 minutes total. Afterward came the reward, a nap where dreams of flying replaced nightmares. For 2 weeks, this remained secret. Years of depression had taught that announcing intentions invited either skeptical discouragement or pressure-filled encouragement, both equally paralyzing. Better to accumulate small victories in private, building evidence against the internal voice insisting this would end in failure. By week 2, when intervals increased to 90 seconds, something shifted. Energy increased. Naps became less necessary. The depression hadn't vanished, but it had competition. Confessing to Ed brought unexpected relief. His response was characteristically perfect. Don't be a runner. Be an interval trainer. No pressure to become something grand, just permission to continue being exactly what felt manageable. The Penguins online forum became the first safe place to share victories. They taught specialized vocabulary, fartlek for speed play, the importance of hydration belts and tech shirts. Even while barely running 5 minutes continuously, thinking of oneself as a runner became possible. Growing up with alcoholic parents established patterns early: sadness, negative thinking, using alcohol to numb pain. A community of ex-problem drinkers taught how to stay sober. The Penguins taught how to stay running. Understanding why running became possible in March 2010 requires looking back 5 years. Weight struggles and approaching 50 were surface factors. Underneath lay something deeper: a desperate need to anchor to life after waves of loss. The relationship with weight had been tumultuous for decades. Anorexia in the 30s meant one bagel, one apple daily. After the nervous breakdown, antidepressants transformed restriction into overeating, weight climbing to 200 pounds. Previous attempts to quit medications always ended the same way: depression and anxiety returning so viciously that begging for prescriptions again became necessary. The phrase "depression hates a moving target" came from experience. Naya dance classes in 2004-2005 created almost hypomanic feelings. When golden retriever Bodhi died, dancing became impossible. Long walks with rescue dog Morgan became the substitute. Then came niece Jamie's osteosarcoma diagnosis in 2006, tumor breaking her femur, spreading to her lungs. Teaching mindfulness to a dying 24-year-old. Jamie died in February 2007. The rest of 2007 became a gauntlet of death, 7 losses culminating in mother's peaceful hospice death on December 30. Nearly a year of eating, sleeping, crying followed until November 2008, when slow walks with Morgan finally began. 16 months later, those walks became 60-second jogs. Discovering running was genetic felt like uncovering a secret inheritance. A father who'd been a record-setting relay anchor, a runner's build hidden under decades of weight.
When the ankle swelled in week 4, 2 weeks of forced walking felt like losing a lifeline. Depression crept back in. The psychiatrist remained vigilant, knowing how quickly darkness could return. In 1994, depression had stolen running completely, shoes shoved to the closet, followed by suicidal thoughts, hospitalization, and leaving the legal profession permanently. Week 5 loomed terrifyingly, especially the final day requiring 20 continuous minutes of jogging. A fellow Penguin's suggestion to just try day 1 became the key. Breaking it into manageable pieces made the impossible feel merely difficult. The medical establishment proved less supportive than the online Penguins. After completing weeks 5 and 6, the left ankle began swelling around the bone. Rest, massage, ice, elevation, nothing worked. The doctor ordered blood tests for rheumatoid arthritis. Despite this terrifying possibility, the pattern continued. Running, swelling, sulking, icing, walking, repeat. What kept the cycle going was the runner's high, that tingling afterglow when endocannabinoids lifted the dark heaviness. The MRI brought claustrophobic panic. Days later, the diagnosis arrived: talocalcaneal coalition with osteoarthritis. The recommended surgeon was a large, intimidating man who hated running and bluntly stated, "Humans aren't built to run long distances." His recommendation, fusion surgery. His warning, continued running would ruin ankles and knees. Running stopped. Depression returned immediately. Walking didn't provide the same mood boost. Dark thoughts began clouding the mind. After the surgeon's devastating advice, depression suffocated everything. Without daily endocannabinoid boosts, life turned bleak. Then the psychiatrist delivered a lifeline. Moderate running beats none at all. She compared running to antidepressants. Both carry risks, but benefits outweigh them. Find the best doctors, get a gait analysis, seek physical therapy. Don't give up. Morgan and the trail called again. The new vow: only seek advice from professionals who honor running. A formula emerged: no consecutive running days, proper form, slower pace to protect the ankle. 5 days after defying the surgeon, a 4-mile run through autumn's colors felt like victory. As the turkey trot approached, pushing to 5 full miles without Morgan felt monumental. Discovery arrived. The second mile was hardest. By mile 3, an inner glow started. By mile 4, feet felt lighter. Finishing 5 miles brought immediate turkey trot registration. The running store trip marked a turning point. Spending more on specialized shoes than on any clothing in years signaled something shifting. This wasn't just exercise, it was reclaiming identity. The Columbus Marathon was a celebration on foot. Bands, DJs, and bagpipes filled every half mile. Familiar faces provided emotional boosts. Ed and friend Linda on Broad Street, news anchor Andrea Camburn waving from her home, friend Christy with a cowbell during the final uphill. Spotting the finish line triggered sprinting. At the MIT tent, head coach Jeff congratulated everyone while dressed in a full Sasquatch costume. Monday brought massage and claiming the coveted 26.2 sticker at Frontrunner. Tuesday brought post-race blues. Despite running being essential to mental health, depression struck. Race memories faded. Instead of elation came sadness, tiredness, soreness, missing deceased family members, unable to embrace the accomplishment. Action became necessary. Wearing the medal and shirt, visiting places where people would celebrate, coffee shop, grocery store, recovery group, letting congratulations sink in. Finally, embracing the truth. Marathoner status achieved. The marathon itself wasn't life-changing. What changed everything was daily training, showing up consistently despite the mind insisting impossibility. Running had become meditation, taught socialization without overwhelm, built self-esteem.
During the first post-race run with Morgan, realization struck.
True training had begun years earlier with that first 60-second jog in cotton clothes. While grateful for community and Ed's support, most training had been ordinary neighborhood runs with just the dog, the watch, and the road, one foot in front of the other. Depression hates a moving target because movement is the language your body speaks when words fail. Your body isn't a vehicle for your brain. It's the reason your brain exists. 60 seconds, that's all it takes to begin. Not 60 minutes of intense exercise or 60 days of perfect consistency. Just 60 seconds of moving when everything inside screams to stay still. Sometimes, the bravest thing you can do isn't crossing a finish line. It's simply lacing up your shoes when depression insists you can't. The journey from that first hidden ravine run to crossing marathon finish lines wasn't about becoming an athlete. It was about discovering that the body holds wisdom the mind has forgotten, that movement creates hope when thinking creates despair, and that sometimes the smallest acts of courage, 60 seconds at a time, build the foundation for transformation that seemed impossible.